38. The Silent Storm. Now, as the Wind Runners were thus engaged, arose the event which has hitherto been referenced, namely that discovery of some wicked thing of eminence, though whether it be some rogueries among the Radiant's adherents, or of some external origin, Avena would not suggest. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 38, Page 6. "Sorry for your loss," Shallan said. "I have brought with me what things of Jasnah's I was able to recover. My men have them outside." She found it surprisingly difficult to say the words with an even tone. She'd grieved for Jasnah during her weeks traveling, yet speaking of the death, remembering that terrible night, returned the emotions like surging waves, threatening to overwhelm again. The image she'd drawn of herself came to her rescue. She could be that woman today, and that woman, while not emotionless, could push through the loss. She focused her attention on the moment and the task at hand, specifically the two people in front of her, Dalinar and Navani Kolin. The High Prince was exactly what she'd expected him to be, a man with blunted features, short black hair silvering at the sides. His stiff uniform made him seem the only one in the room who knew anything about combat. She wondered if those bruises on his face were the result of the campaign against the Parshendi. Navani looked like a version of Jasnah 20 years older, still pretty, though with a motherly air. Shallan could never imagine Jasnah being motherly. Navani had been smiling as Shallan approached, but now that levity was gone. She still had hope for her daughter, Shallan thought, as the woman sat down in a nearby seat. "I just crushed it."
"I thank you for bringing us this news," Bright Lord Dalinar said. "It is good to have confirmation."
It felt terrible. Not just to be reminded of the death, but to weigh others down with it as well. "I have information for you," Shallan said, trying to be delicate. "About the things Jasnah was working on."
"More about those parchment?" Navani snapped. "Storms. That woman was too fascinated by them. Ever since she got it into her head that she was to blame for Gavilar's death."
What was this? That wasn't a side of all this that Shallan had ever heard.
"Her research can wait," Navani said, eyes fierce. "I want to know exactly what happened when you think you saw her die. Precisely as you remember it, girl. No details passed over."
"Perhaps after the meeting,"
Dalinar said, resting a hand on Navani's shoulder. The touch was surprisingly tender. Was this not his brother's wife? That look in his eyes, was that familial affection for his sister, or was it something more?
"No, Dalinar," Navani said. "Now. I would hear it now."
Shallan took a deep breath, preparing to begin, steeling herself against the emotions, and finding herself surprisingly in control. As she gathered her thoughts, she noticed a blonde-haired young man watching her. That would likely be Adrelin. He was handsome, as rumors indicated, and wore a blue uniform like his father. And yet, Adolin's was somehow more stylish? Was that the right word? She liked how his somewhat unruly hair contrasted with the crisp uniform. It made him seem more real, less picturesque. She turned back to Navani. "I woke in the middle of the night to shouting and the smell of smoke. I opened my door to unfamiliar men crowded around the doorway to Jasnah's cabin, across the companionway from my own. They had her body on the floor and... brightness. I watched them stab her through the heart. I'm sorry." Navani tensed, head flinching as if she'd been slapped. Shallan continued. She tried to give Navani as much truth as she could, but obviously the things Shallan had done, weaving light, soul-casting the ship, weren't wise to share,
at least for now. Instead, she indicated that she'd barricaded herself in her cabin, a lie she'd already prepared.
I heard the men yelling up above as they were being executed one by one, Shallan said. I realized that the only hope I could give them was a crisis for the brigands, so I used the torch I'd taken and set the ship on fire.
On fire? Navani asked, horrified. With my daughter unconscious?
Navani, Dalinar said, squeezing her shoulder.
You doomed her, Navani said, locking eyes with Shallan. Yasna wouldn't have been able to swim like the others. She,
Navani, Dalinar repeated more firmly. This child's choice was a good one. You can hardly expect her to have taken on a band of men single-handed. And what she saw. Yasna was not unconscious, Navani. It was too late to do anything for her at that point.
The woman took a deep breath, obviously struggling to keep her emotions in check.
I apologize, she said to Shallan. I am not myself at the moment. And I stray toward the irrational. Thank you for bringing word to us.
She stood. Excuse me.
Dalinar nodded, letting her make a reasonably graceful exit. Shallan stepped back, hands clasped before herself, feeling impotent and strangely ashamed as she watched Navani leave. She hadn't expected that to go particularly well, and it hadn't. She took the moment to check on Pattern, who was on her skirt, practically invisible. Even if he was noticed, he'd be thought an odd part of the fabric design, assuming that was he did as she'd ordered and didn't move or speak.
I assume your trip here was an ordeal, Dalinar said, turning to Shallan. Shipwrecked in the Frostlands?
Yes. Fortunately, I met with a caravan and traveled with them this way. We did encounter bandits, I regret to say, but were rescued by the timely arrival of some soldiers.
Soldiers? Dalinar said, surprised. From what banner?
They did not say, Shallan replied. I take it they were formerly of the Shattered Plains.
Deserters?
I have not asked for specifics, Bright Lord, Shallan said. But I did promise them clemency for previous crimes, in recognition of their act of nobility. They saved dozens of lives. Everyone in the caravan I joined can vouch for the bravery of these men. I suspect they sought atonement and a chance to start over.
I will see that the king seals pardons for them, Dalinar said. Prepare a list for me. Hanging soldiers always feels like a waste.
Shallan relaxed. One item dealt with. There is another matter of some delicacy we must discuss, Bright Lord, Shallan said. They both turned toward Adolin, loitering nearby. He smiled. And he did have a very nice smile. When Yasna had first explained the causal to her, Shallan's interest had been completely abstract. Marriage into a powerful Alethi house? Allies for her brothers? Legitimacy and a way to continue working with Yasna for the salvation of the world? These had seemed like wonderful things. Looking at Adolin's grin, however, she didn't consider any of those advantages. Her pains of speaking of Yasna didn't fade completely, but she found it much easier to ignore them when looking at him. She found herself blushing. This, she thought, could be dangerous. Adolin stepped up to join them, the hum of conversation all around giving them some privacy within the crowd. He had found a cup of orange wine for her somewhere, which he held out.
Shallan Devar? He asked.
Was she? Oh, right. She took the wine. Yes?
Adolin Colin, he said. I am sorry to hear of your hardships. We will need to speak to the king of his sister. I can spare you that task if I might go in your place.
Thank you, Shallan said. But I would prefer to see him myself.
Of course, Adolin said.
As for our involvement, it did make a lot more sense when you were Yasna's ward, didn't it?
Probably.
Though, now that you're here, perhaps we should go for a walk and just see how things feel.
I like to walk, Shallan said.
Stupid, quick, say something witty.
Your hair is nice.
A part of her, the part trained by Tin, groaned. My hair? Adolin said, touching it.
Yes,
Shallan said, trying to get her sluggish brain working again.
Blonde hair isn't often seen in Yakaved.
Some people see it as a mark of my bloodline being impure.
Funny. They say the same thing about me because of my hair.
She smiled at him. That seemed the right move, since he smiled back. Her verbal recovery hadn't been the deftest of her career, but she couldn't be doing so poorly, so long as he was smiling. Dalinar cleared his throat. Shallan blinked. She'd completely forgotten that the High Prince was there.
Adolin, he said. Fetch me some wine.
Father? Adolin turned to him.
Oh, all right then.
He walked off.
Ashes, eyes! That man was handsome.
She turned to Dalinar, who, well, wasn't.
Oh, he was distinguished, but his nose had been broken at some point, and his face was a tad unfortunate.
The bruises didn't help either. In fact, he was downright intimidating.
I would know more of you, he said softly. The precise status of your family, and why you are so eager to be involved with my son.
My family is destitute, Shallan said.
Frankness seemed the right approach with this man. My father is dead, though the people to whom we owe money do not yet know it. I had not considered a union with Adolin until Yasna suggested it, but I would seize it eagerly, if allowed. Marriage into your house would provide my family with a great deal of protection.
She still didn't know what to do about the soul caster her brothers owed.
One step at a time. Dalinar grunted. He wouldn't have expected her to be so direct.
So you have nothing to offer, he said.
From what Yasna said to me of your opinions, Shallan said, I did not assume that my monetary or political offerings would be your first consideration. If such a union was your goal, you'd have had Prince Adolin married off years ago.
She winced at her forwardness.
With all due respect, Bright Lord.
No offense taken, Dalinar said. I like it when people are direct. Just because I want to let my son have a say in the matter doesn't mean I don't want him to marry well. A woman from a minor foreign house who professes her family is destitute and who brings nothing to the union?
I did not say I could offer nothing, Shallan replied. Bright Lord, how many wards has Yasna Kolin taken in the last 10 years?
None that I know of, he admitted.
Do you know how many she has turned away?
I've an inkling.
Yet she took me. Might that not constitute an endorsement of what I can offer? Dalinar nodded slowly.
We will maintain the causal for now, he said. The reason I agreed to it in the first place still stands. I want Adolin to be seen as unavailable to those who would manipulate him for political gain. If you can somehow persuade me, Brightness Navani, and of course the lad himself, we can progress the causal to a full betrothal. In the meantime, I'll give you a position among my lesser clerks. You can prove yourself there.
The offer, though generous, felt like ropes tightening about her. The stipend of a lesser clerk would be enough to live on, but nothing to brag about. And she had no doubt that Dalinar would be watching her. Those eyes of his were scarily discerning. She wouldn't be able to move without her actions being reported to him. His charity would be her prison.
That is generous of you, Bright Lord, she found herself saying. But I actually have...
Dalinar, one of the others in the room called. Are we going to start this meeting again sometime today? Or am I going to have to order in a proper dinner?
Dalinar turned toward a plump, bearded man in traditional clothing, an open-fronted robe over a loose shirt and warrior's skirt, called a takama. High Prince Sabariel, Shallan thought. Yasna's notes dismissed him as obnoxious and useless. She'd had kinder words even for High Prince Sadius, whom she had noted was not to be trusted.
Fine, fine, Sabariel, Dalinar said, breaking away from Shallan and walking to a group of seats in the center of the room.
He settled down in one beside the desk there. A proud man with a prominent nose settled down next to him. That would be the king, Elokar. He was younger than Shallan had pictured. Why had Sabariel called on Dalinar to reconvene the meeting and not the king? The next few moments were a test of Shallan's preparation as high-born men and women settled themselves in the lavish chairs. Beside each one was a small table, and behind that, a master servant for important needs. A number of parshmen kept the tables filled with wine, nuts, and fresh and dried fruit. Shallan shivered each time one of those passed her. She counted the high princes off in her head. Sadius was easy to pick out, red-faced from visible veins under the skin, like her father had displayed after drinking. Others nodded to him and let him seat himself first. He seemed to command as much respect as Dalinar. His wife, Iole, was a slender-necked woman with thick lips, large bust, and a wide mouth. Yasna had noted that she was as shrewd as her husband. Two high princes sat to either side of the couple. One was Aladar, a renowned duelist. The short man was listed in Yasna's notes as a powerful high prince, fond of taking risks, known to gamble in the type of games of random chance that the devotaries forbade. He and Sadius seemed to be on very friendly terms. Weren't they enemies? She'd read that they often squabbled over lands. Well, that was obviously a broken stone, for they seemed united as they regarded Dalinar. Joining them were High Prince Ruthar and his wife. Yasna considered them to be little more than thieves, but warned that the pair were dangerous and opportunistic. The room seemed oriented so that all eyes were on those two factions, the king and Dalinar against Sadius, Ruthar, and Aladar. Obviously, the political alignments had changed since Yasna made her notes. The room hushed, and nobody seemed to care that Shallan was watching. Adolin took a seat behind his father, next to a younger man in spectacles and an empty seat probably vacated by Navani. Shallan carefully rounded the room. The peripheries were clogged with guards, attendants, and even some men in shard plate, getting out of Dalinar's direct line of sight, just in case he noticed her and decided to eject her. Bright Lady Yela Ruthar spoke first, leaning forward over clasped hands.
Your Majesty, she said, I fear that our conversation this day has run in circles, and that nothing is being accomplished. Your safety is, of course, our greatest concern.
Across the circle of high princes, Sabariel snorted loudly as he chewed on slices of melon. Everyone else seemed to pointedly ignore the obnoxious bearded man.
Yes, Aladar said. The assassin in white. We must do something. I will not wait in my palace to be assassinated.
He is murdering princes and kings all over the world, Roian added.
The man looked like a turtle to Shallan, with those hunched shoulders and that balding head. What had Yasna said about him?
That he's a coward, Shallan thought. He always chooses the safe option.
We must present a unified Alethkar, Hatham said.
She recognized him immediately, with that long neck and refined way of speaking.
We must not allow ourselves to be attacked one at a time, and we must not squabble.
That's precisely why you should follow my commands, the king said, frowning at the high princes.
No, Ruthar said.
It is why we must abandon these ludicrous restrictions you have placed upon us, Your Majesty. This is not a time to look foolish before the world.
Listen to Ruthar,
Sabariel said dryly, leaning back in his chair.
He's an expert at looking like a fool.
The arguing continued, and Shallan got a better feel for the room. There were actually three factions. Dalinar and the King, the team with Sadeas, and what she dubbed the Peacemakers. Led by Hatham, who seemed, when he spoke, the most natural politician in the room, this third group sought to mediate. So that's what it's really about, she thought, listening as Ruthar argued with the King and Adolin Kolin. They're each trying to persuade these neutral High Princes to join their faction. Dalinar said little, the same for Sadeas, who seemed content to let High Prince Ruthar and his wife speak for him. The two watched each other, Dalinar with a neutral expression, Sadeas with a faint smile. It seemed innocent enough until you saw their eyes, locked on to one another, rarely blinking. There was a storm in this room, a silent one. Everyone seemed to fall into one of the three factions except for Sabariel, who kept rolling his eyes, occasionally throwing out commentary that bordered on the obscene. He obviously made the other Alethi, with their haughty airs, uncomfortable. Shallan slowly picked apart the conversation's subtext. This talk of prohibitions and rules placed by the king, it wasn't the rules themselves that seemed to matter, but the authority behind them. How much would the High Princes submit to the King, and how much autonomy could they demand? It was fascinating. Right up to the moment when one of them mentioned her.
Wait, said Vama, one of the neutral High Princes. Who is that girl over there? Does someone have a Vaiden in their retinue?
She was speaking with Dalinar, Roian said. Is there news of Yakoved that you're keeping from us, Dalinar?
You girl, said Ela Sadeas. What can you tell us of your homeland's succession war? Do you have information on this assassin? Why would someone in the employ of the Parshendi seek to undermine your throne?
All eyes in the room turned toward Shallan. She felt a moment of sheer panic. The most important people in the world interrogating her, their eyes drilling into her. And then she remembered the drawing. That was who she was. Alas, Shallan said, I will be of little use to you, Bright Lords and Bright Ladies. I was away from my homeland when that tragic assassination occurred, and I have no insight into its cause.
Then what are you doing here?
Hatham asked, polite, but insistent.
She's watching the zoo, obviously, Sabariel said. The lot of you making fools of yourselves is the best free entertainment to be found in this frozen wasteland.
It probably was wise to ignore that one. I am the ward of Yasna Kolin, Shallan said, meeting Hatham's eyes. My purpose here is of a personal nature.
Ah, Aladar said. The phantom betrothal I've heard rumors of. That's right, Ruthar said.
He had a decidedly oily look about him, with dark slicked hair, burly arms, and a beard around the mouth. Most disturbing, however, was that smile of his, a smile that seemed far too predatory.
Child, what would it take for you to visit my war camp and speak to my scribes? I need to know what is happening in Yakoved. I will do better than that, Roian said. Where are you staying, girl? I offer an invitation to visit my palace. I too would hear of your homeland.
But she just said she didn't know anything. Shallan dredged up Yasna's training. They didn't care about Yakoved. They wanted to get information about her betrothal. They suspected that there was more to the story. The two who had just invited her were among those Yasna rated the least politically savvy. The others, like Aladar and Hatham, would wait until a private time to make the invitation, so they didn't reveal their interest in public.
"Your concern is unwarranted, Rowian," Dalinar said. "She is, of course, staying in my war camp and has a position among my clerks."
"Actually," Shallan said, "I didn't get a chance to respond to your offer, Bright Lord Colin. I would love the opportunity to be in your service, but alas, I have already taken a position in another war camp."
Stunned silence.
She knew what she wanted to say next. A huge gamble, one of which Yasna would never have approved. She found herself speaking anyway, trusting her instincts. It worked in art, after all. "Bright Lord Sabariel," Shallan said, looking toward the bearded man that Yasna so thoroughly detested, "was the first to offer me a position and invite me to stay with him." The man almost choked on his wine. He looked up over the cup toward her, narrowing his eyes. She shrugged with what she hoped was an innocent gesture, and smiled. "Please."
"Ah, that's right," Sabariel said, leaning back. "She's a distant family relation. Couldn't possibly live with myself if I didn't give her a place to stay."
His offer was quite generous, Shallan said. 3 full bromes a week support. Sabariel's eyes bugged out.
"I wasn't aware of this," Dalinar said, looking from Sabariel to her.
"I'm sorry, Bright Lord," Shallan said. "I should have told you. I didn't find it appropriate to be staying in the house of someone who was courting me. Surely you understand." He frowned.
"What I'm having trouble understanding is why anyone would want to be closer to Sabariel than they need to be."
"Oh, Uncle Sabariel is quite tolerable once you get used to him," Shallan said. "Like a very annoying noise that you eventually learn to ignore." Most seemed horrified at her comment, though Aladar smiled. Sabariel, as she'd hoped, laughed out loud.
"I guess that is settled," Ruthar said, dissatisfied. "I do hope you'll at least be willing to come brief me." "Give it up, Ruthar," Sabariel said. "She's too young for you. Though with you involved, I'm sure it would be brief."
Ruthar sputtered.
"I wasn't implying, you moldy old bah!"
Shallan was glad that attention then turned from her back to the topics at hand, because that last comment had her blushing. Sabariel was inappropriate. Still, he seemed to be making an effort to leave himself out of these political discussions, and that seemed like the place where Shallan wanted to be, the position with the most freedom. She would still work with Dalinar and Navani on Yasna's notes, but she didn't want to be beholden to them. "Who is to say being beholden to this man is any different?" Shallan thought, rounding the room to approach where Sabariel sat, without wife or family members to attend him. He was unmarried.
"Almost threw you out on your ear, girl,"
Sabariel said quietly, sipping his wine and not looking at her.
"Stupid move, putting yourself in my hands. Everyone knows I like to set things on fire and watch them burn."
"And yet you didn't throw me out," she said. "So it wasn't a stupid move. Merely a risk that paid rewards."
"Still might drop you. I'm certainly not paying that 3 bromes. That's almost as much as my mistress costs. And at least I get something from that arrangement."
"You'll pay," Shallan said. "It's a matter of public record now. But don't worry. I will earn my keep."
"You have information about Colin?"
Sabariel asked, studying his wine. So he did care. "Information, yes," Shallan said. "Less about Colin and more about the world itself. Trust me, Sabariel. You've just entered into a very profitable arrangement." She'd have to figure out why that was. The others continued arguing about the assassin in white, and she gathered that he had attacked here but had been fought off, as Aladar steered the conversation to a complaint that his gemstones were being taken by the crown. Shallan didn't know the reason they'd been seized. Dalinar Kolin slowly stood up. He moved like a rolling boulder, inevitable, implacable. Aladar trailed off.
I passed a curious pile of stones along my path, Dalinar said, of a type I found remarkable. The fractured shale had been weathered by high storms, blown up against stone of a more durable nature. This pile of thin wafers lay as if stacked by some mortal hand.
The others looked at Dalinar as if he were mad. Something about the words tugged at Shallan's memory. They were a quotation from something she'd once read. Dalinar turned, walking toward the open windows on the leeward side of the room.
But no man had stacked these stones. Precarious though they looked, they were actually quite solid. A formation from once buried strata, now exposed to open air. I wondered how it was possible they remained in such a neat stack, with the fury of the tempests blowing against them. I soon ascertained their true nature. I found that force from one direction pushed them back against one another and the rock behind. No amount of pressure I could produce in that manner caused them to shift. And yet when I removed one stone from the bottom, pulling it out instead of pushing it in, the entire formation collapsed in a miniature avalanche.
The room's occupants stared at him until Sabariel finally spoke for all of them. Dalinar, the plump man said, what in damnation's 11th name are you on about?
Our methods aren't working, Dalinar said,
looking back at the lot of them.
Years at war, and we find ourselves in the same position as before. We can no more fight this assassin now than on the night he killed my brother. The king of Yakived put 3 shard-bearers and half an army up against the creature, then died with a blade through the chest, his shards left to be scavenged by opportunists. If we cannot defeat the assassin, then we must remove his reason for attacking. If we can capture or eliminate his employers, then perhaps we can invalidate whatever contract binds him. Last we knew, he was employed by the Parshendi. Great, Ruthar said dryly. All we have to do is win the war, which we've only been trying to do for 5 years. We haven't been trying, Dalinar said. Not hard enough. I intend to make peace with the Parshendi. If they will not have it on our terms, then I will set out into the Shattered Plains with my army and any who will join me. No more games on plateaus, fighting over gem hearts. I will strike toward the Parshendi camp, find it, and defeat them once and for all.
The king sighed softly, leaning back behind his desk. Shallan guessed he'd been expecting this.
Out onto the Shattered Plains, Sadius said. That sounds like a marvelous thing for you to try.
Dalinar, Hatham said, speaking with obvious care.
I don't see that our situation has changed. The Shattered Plains are still largely unexplored, and the Parshendi camp could be literally anywhere out there, hidden among miles and miles of terrain that our army cannot traverse without great difficulty. We agreed that attacking their camp was imprudent, so long as they were willing to come to us.
Their willingness to come to us, Hatham, Dalinar said, has proved to be a problem, because it puts the battle on their terms. No, our situation hasn't changed, merely our resolve. This war has persisted far too long already. I will finish it, one way or another.
Sounds wonderful, Sadius repeated.
Will you be off tomorrow or wait until the next day?
Dalinar gave him a disdainful look.
Just trying to estimate when there will be an open war camp, Sadius said innocently. I've almost outgrown mine and wouldn't mind spilling into a second once the Parshendi slaughter you and yours. To think, After all the trouble you got yourself into by getting surrounded out there, that you're going to go do it again.
Adolin stood up behind his father, face red, anger spren bubbling at his feet like pools of blood. His brother coaxed him back down into his seat. There was something here, obviously, that Shallan was missing. I wandered into the middle of all this without nearly enough context, she thought. Storms, I'm lucky I haven't been chewed up already. Suddenly she wasn't quite so proud of her accomplishments this day.
Before the high storm last night, Dalinar said, we had a messenger from the Parshendi, the first willing to speak with us in ages. He said that his leaders wished to discuss the possibility of peace.
The high princes looked stunned.
Peace? Shallan thought, heart leaping. That would certainly make it easier to get out and search for Yirithiru.
That very night, Dalinar said softly, the assassin struck again. Last time he came was just after we had signed a peace treaty with the Parshendi. Now he comes again the day of another peace offer.
Those bastards, Aladar said softly. Is this some kind of twisted ritual of theirs?
It might be a coincidence, Dalinar said. The assassin has been striking all over the world. Surely the Parshendi haven't contacted all of these people. However, the events make me wary. Almost, I wonder if the Parshendi are being framed, if someone is using this assassin to make certain that Alethkar never knows peace. But then the Parshendi did claim to have hired him to kill my brother.
Maybe they're desperate, Roian said, hunkering down in his chair. One faction among them sues for peace while the other does whatever it can to destroy us.
Either way, I intend to plan for the worst, Dalinar said, looking to Sadeas. I will be making my way to the center of the Shattered Plains, either to defeat the Parshendi for good, or to accept their surrender and disarmament. But such an expedition will take time to arrange. I'll need to train my men for an extended operation and send scouts to map farther into the middle of the plains. Beyond that, I need to choose some new shard-bearers.
New shard-bearers? Roian asked, turtle-like head rising in curiosity.
I will soon come into the possession of more shards, Dalinar said. And are we allowed to know the source of this amazing trove? Aladar asked. Why, Adolin is going to win them from all of you, Dalinar said.
Some of the others chuckled as if it were a joke. Dalinar did not seem to intend it as one. He sat back down, and the others took this as marking an end to the meeting. Once again it seemed that Dalinar and not the king truly led.
The entire balance of power has shifted here, Shallan thought, as has the nature of the war. Yasna's notes about the court were definitely outdated.
Well, I suppose you're going to accompany me back to my camp now, Sabariel said to her, rising.
Which means this meeting wasn't just the usual waste of time listening to blowhards make veiled threats to one another. It actually cost me money as well.
It could be worse, Shallan said, helping the older man rise, as he seemed somewhat unsteady on his feet. That passed once he was standing, and he pulled his arm free.
Worse? How?
I could be boring as well as expensive. He looked at her, then laughed.
I suppose that's true. Well, come on, then.
Just a moment, Shallan said. You go on ahead and I'll catch up at your carriage. She walked off, seeking the king, to whom she personally delivered news of Yasna's death. They took it well, with regal dignity. Dalinar had probably already informed him. That task done, she sought out the king's scribes. A short time later, she left the conference chamber and found Vatha and Gaz waiting nervously outside. She handed a sheet of paper to Vatha.
What's this?
He asked, twisting it about. Writ of pardon, she said. Sealed by the king. It's for you and your men. We'll soon receive specific ones with their names on them.
but meanwhile this will keep you from being arrested.
You actually did it?
Vatha asked, looking it over, though he obviously couldn't make sense of the writing.
Storms, you actually kept your word?
Of course I did, Shallan said. Note that it only covers past crimes, so tell the men to be on their best behavior. Now let's be going. I have arranged a place for us to stay.